listening to The Good Morning Show with Oliver O.T. Thomas.
Back 7:33 a.m. in the morning. We got Miss Harrington in the studio, keeping her eyes on what we do here with how would I say, boss lady, Dr. Rochelle at Dunham. Rochelle, she's the conscience. That's what I'm gonna call her, Jamel, the conscience of New Orleans. Dr. Rochelle, here, that's what we do. We give out monikers and tag people here on the Good Morning Show. May want to thank United Healthcare, affordable, fabulous, the best healthcare in the world, one of the best healthcare systems in the world, partnering with WBOK to make sure that we can bring you quality programming and quality information. And we appreciate our partnership with the Greater New Orleans Tourism and Marketing Commission in honor of the tricentennial. But we appreciate this lady, yeah, the conscience of New Orleans, Executive Director and Medical Director of Metropolitan Human Services District. Welcome back to the Good Morning Show.
Thank you, Oliver.
Now, thank you for what you do. You know, in describing you, you bring a level of passion and intellect to a lot of critical issues in this town. We know that there's real talk. We know there are very smart people who work in sectors and silos in many cases, but they're not able to parlay that into what the public needs. You are one of those people, an academic and intellect, a social scientist, who's able to do that, but also be able to do it in a way that people understand there are critical sectors and critical areas that need our attention. God bless you, and we appreciate you for that.
Thank you.
This homelessness piece, no one seems to be able to kind of figure it out. You know, we've had the people from Unity. We've had folk from the mission on.
Yeah.
We've talked about some gains we've made in homelessness. But then again, on the other side, the public says, but why do we see so many more now?
Yeah.
What are the contributing factors now? And if we're making strides and gains in dealing with the homeless population, why aren't we able to feel it?
Yeah. Well, I want to start off by saying there are five points that I want us to ponder as we talk about this, because this is a huge animal, and it's one that most people have to deal with, though they prefer not to deal with it because it's so complicated. Mm-hmm. But on the five things I want to just make as a point for the audience is, there are about 1,300 people in New Orleans, according to the homeless point in time count in February. Now, that's
chronic homelessness?
Chronic homelessness, yes. So, and then according to the Treatment Advocacy Center, about a third of the people who experience homelessness in the United States suffer from some form of severe mental illness. Third, there's a serious lack of affordable and stable housing, which we all know, for homeless individuals once they receive any kind of treatment. And then Metropolitan partners with agencies to provide assistance with housing, employment, and a number of other resources. And fifth, drug overdose was the cause of death for more than half of the 60 homeless individuals who died last year. So there are lots of statistics around this group.
Dr. Dunham, that's a very telling, especially because there are two areas that we deal with a lot here. We do our outreach when you talk about drugs. Brian Singleton and Steve Azan with the DAA have been contributors. As a matter of fact, we're working with them now about some outreach with this increase in cheap heroin and cheap drugs out on the street right now that are actually spurning.
Right.
And behind a lot of this violence, and especially with young kids now who are engaging in so much drug abuse.
Yes.
And then the other piece is the affordable housing piece.
Yes.
I think your statistic about the homelessness probably validates the need for more affordable housing better than all of the other data that we've gotten from folk like Andronica Morris and housing advocates. It really kind of highlights the problem.
Yeah, it does, you know. And you can bring, you have had, and if you had Unity in the room with mm-hmm. me now, they would tell you that all of their housing is not utilized in terms of the full mm-hmm. capacity of housing that's available. If you combine the state housing that's available through state mm-hmm. avenues as well as through HUD and the feds, all of the housing is not necessarily mm-hmm. being used, but there are the voucher system that they have in place, the chronicity definition that they use.
Now, chronicity, that's a wonderful word.
The word that is yeah. the duration of time mm-hmm. that you have to be
right.
homeless to qualify for the housing
right.
is, frankly, mm-hmm. it's a barrier,
mm-hmm.
But they only offer a certain kind of product. So here's what I'm saying. So those of us who know this mm-hmm. and work with people who are homeless mm-hmm. sometimes, frankly, get frustrated with the one-year requirement.
Right.
That you are right. homeless in right. order for you to meet the criteria.
That's crazy.
It is, but it's crazier because
you got to breed in the street for me to help get you off the street.
For a year. Right. If I live through.
If I'm not in those categories.
That's right.
Wow.
The issue, though, I think the bigger issue we have to ponder is, but they're really the only major game in town.
Mm-hmm.
And this is their criteria. So what else needs to be going on to supplement? There's a process called transitional housing mm-hmm. where you can be housed for 90 days
yeah.
in certain environments, right. and that counts towards your 1 year. But that's still, again, funneling people through a singular system for housing. We need multiple options for housing. We can't just have a HUD-only, Unity-only answer.
We just heard the reason for much of the chronic homelessness here, Dr. Rochelle had done them like nobody can. I told you guys, intellect, social science, compassion, and care, that even using words like chronicity,
mm-hmm.
right?
Yeah.
You're going to get that.
You're going to get a few words out of this.
You're going to get a few words out of then why don't we see more of a comprehensive approach? I'll go back to the last time there was an effort to do that,
mm-hmm.
Former Mayor Mark Worrell started the task force on, mm-hmm. on housing. And I was one of the co-chairs that we were trying to do a legacy project, right,
mm-hmm.
where they were going to bring all the providers together. They had to be on the same page. They were trying to follow the Orlando model that was mm-hmm. so successful back in the 90s and the early 2000s. Of course, they could never come up with enough money.
Mm-hmm.
They were going to do a comprehensive center right there on Poydras, mm-hmm. have all of the agencies have an influence and have staff at the agency with wraparound services.
Yes.
What you're saying right yes. now is the only solution. That never happened.
Yes, but that is exactly what needs to happen. See, so here's where I am, mm-hmm. here back to Metropolitan.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. I'm at the place now, mm-hmm. Oliver, where I need to get my own building. Okay?
Right, right.
So my plea here, and it has been mm-hmm. now, is I need somebody to just give me a building.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I'm not going to solve all the problems of homelessness.
Right.
No, I'm not.
Right.
But the people that come through our doors,
right.
who we know. Now, we've got all of this intellectual capability at mm-hmm. Metropolitan. We've mm-hmm. got skill sets up the wazoo, mm-hmm. right?
Yes.
They're federally and state funded,
right.
right? You do all of that. And then in a few months after you provide all this fancy treatment or while you're trying to, the person doesn't have a place to lay their head at night. Who's going to take medication at that point if I'm just trying to meet my basic needs of food, shelter, safety?
That kind of sounds like what Reverend Smith and businessman Blair Boutique explained as the reentry problem. The first 72 is critical.
It's absolutely.
But if you only have a place where the first 72 can house one or two people,
exactly,
and you have more reentry because we had more incarceration per capita, yeah. then you're just you're actually digging a hole.
Yeah, it's a revolving door. It's a revolving door. It's,
right.
it's to me. I think you're dumping money into a black hole. You really are.
Now let's talk about something, Dr. Dunham. And I've said it on this show before, and I was going to get to it, but it's amazing how God works and energy works.
Mm-hmm.
First of all, philanthropy has taken a different turn in many cases, right?
Mm-hmm.
Philanthropy that used to support areas like yours, mm-hmm. historical. nonprofits and communities that deal with hard issues in the community, they're taking a hit. A lot of these foundations are going to sexy things, you know, charter education, different types of different programs to tease and to train and untrain the kids. But we see right now in many cases is a resource problem.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it is. It is. And it does require non-traditional partnering. The expectation that the people in my world work together to deal with these social ills is a fallacy to solution. It is. It just won't happen.
Right.
I need the people with the money. See, I can't, with the funding that we get, I can't purchase a building. I can't renovate a building.
Right.
But if I have a philanthropist who has structures, maintains it, I could put the people in there and I will take 100% responsibility for their care. They can't do that. I can do that. But I need you to give me the resource to do it. We have to step away from the traditional ways of thinking about how to solve these problems.
Right.
We just want, and some of it is in the way we used to do it.
Right.
I agree with you there.
Doc, so, you know, you're in these meetings. You're one of the leading authorities in this city and this state on what you do. Well, most of the cream of the crop, at one point, you get a chance to sit and talk and wax eloquently with them and talk about solutions and ideas. What do you attribute the resource problem to? We see government budgets continue to grow, even if your budget takes a hit. We see so much more wealth being acquired amongst philanthropists and business people who contribute. Why the reluctance now to put in these hard-hitting social issues? Why is it so difficult to raise valuable and much-needed resources?
I don't, you know, I mean, you used the word a few minutes ago. You used the word sexy. I think that's one of the reasons. It's not pretty. It's not glamorous. I also think just priorities. People's priorities don't align.
I'm going to ask you this question. And I talked about the totem pole theory here in America. We know that it's real, whether it's race, class, gender, affiliation. Here in New Orleans, the caste system is real. If people in need lost some of their luster and value now, is there a sense of numbness to the least of thee? In Matthew 25, 35 and 36, those words really don't ring. Do they ring more hollow today? I know I'm not trying to put you on the spot, but I'm tracking your train of thought and I'm tracking your intelligence about what we need to do, and then the resources, you know, and a lot of public policy and a lot of expectations from people who have those resources, they don't match the need.
So I have for 28 years existed in a world of public servanthood, okay?
All right.
That's my world. Love it.
And still you rise.
Well, it's my world, right?
Right.
It's my ministry,
right.
Correct.
In spite of.
So most of the people who I'm encircled with are people who are in the throes of this very, very difficult depth of complexity for people. There's another world out there, though, that I think is perhaps so removed from that. They're not dealing with it on a day-to-day basis. They're not really up close person, and personal with it on a day. So it's as if it doesn't exist. It's not a priority because it doesn't. The reason why the opioid epidemic is such a, and I'm saying this paradoxically, I'm not really meaning this, but a wonderful thing to have happened is because it's drawn the attention of the people who normally are not even thinking about this on a day-to-day basis. It's just come so close and personal to so many people who don't deal with this issue. Homelessness is no different. If I don't, you know, I see an occasional person on the street who's got a sign up, and I rationalize whatever about that, and I keep it moving, right? But I don't really deal with that. That's not really a part of my life,
that's
my world, my situation.
Right.
So it's real.
Until
it is. Then it becomes something that I really, really have to think about. Then it becomes partly my problem, too. But this is somebody else's problem. This is somebody else's situation to fix. I really believe that. And not necessarily saying that people, you know, the people aren't good or they aren't even doing for the least of their brethren. But they're not doing for these brethren.
They're just a tad removed.
Yeah.
Caroline Hunter, one of our great educators, a woman who fought Polaroid Kodak, was actually from New Orleans. She sat with me once, and she said that even with all of the access to information today, it's creating a void.
Yeah. It's too much.
Because it's actually too much.
It's too much.
So people are not really able to connect to critical issues.
Yeah. Can't hone in on the critical.
Like they were used to. And
yeah.
we're seeing it yeah. in terms of programs being resourced, and we're seeing it in terms of solutions and outcomes. We're going to go to the lines right now.
Yes.
Line one, Kevin, God bless you. You're on with Dr. Dunham.
As always, thank you, thank Oliver, you. And your guests for coming and contributing to try to address some of these solutions. I just wanted to say that, look, we got to remember, War, politics is war without bloodshed. We have a ruling class in the society who rules because of chaos, okay? And as long as you are far removed from having the condition, and I think doctor addressed that, we are desensitized. We don't care about it because we're profiting from that chaos. So, you know, until we start getting people, when we all were poor black, particularly black, we had more compassion for our community. Now that we're far removed from it, we are absent. Now, until we address resources, simple resources, you don't have to be, I see homeless shelters all around my neighborhood, people who are predators, or they have places for them, they have people who are, for different reasons, I guess they call them some kind of houses where they have a couple of guys, okay? Mm-hmm. If we start training more people, and I don't suspect it takes that much resource to train some people to open up some of their facilities. We got all these abandoned facilities.
Yeah.
We have to start
yeah.
making it where
yeah.
we can show those people. If you put a little money into that, mm-hmm. you can do what's already being done. And I don't think these rich people who are doing this.
Thank you, Kevin, as always, man, for offering solutions. We appreciate you, Kev. Thank you.
Thank you.
There are economic opportunities in affordable housing.
Yeah.
There's economic opportunities in providing transitional, short-term, and long-term housing for homelessness.
Yeah.
They're not free.
Right.
That's a market we're not taking advantage of.
Yeah, and it's certainly one that needs to be explored more because I think most people are going to do something if they can get that question answered. What's in it for me?
What's in it for me?
Right? So, I mean, that's fair.
Right.
We get gratification
mm-hmm.
out of taking care of people.
Right.
Everybody doesn't have that. That's not their thing necessarily.
Right.
So
right.
I think a part of it, too, is developing that
mm-hmm.
Those talking points, or developing
mm-hmm.
that perspective on
mm-hmm.
how can this be a benefit to the individuals who you're trying to seek? Because you really can't expect
people. But isn't that amazing today? Though, that we have to convince people of the common good for them to get involved. Criminal justice reform is another example. Well, you have to show the people that they're saving billions of dollars. Okay.
Yeah.
Didn't they realize they were wasting billions of dollars because it wasn't having an impact on crime?
Yeah.
Well, don't you? You have to show the business community that if they do for the least of thee.
Yeah.
That it actually
helps
them.
Everybody, yeah.
It helps everybody.
It's an unfortunate situation that we're in. But we didn't just get here overnight either.
Right.
We've had erosion
right.
over decades of people prioritizing people necessarily.
So, Doc, what do we do? Okay, 1,300 chronic homelessness. And let me say this. We forget sometimes. And I was talking about the stat the other day. Chicago is actually the ninth most violent city in America. New Orleans is in the top four, St. Louis, New Orleans,
mm-hmm.
Detroit, and Baltimore,
yeah.
when you look at per capita violence.
Okay.
34th most violent city in the world.
Mm-hmm.
You talk about per capita.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we have less than 400,000 people
yeah.
in this town. We're a little tiny dot with 1,300 homeless and all these major social ills. Don't people get it?
I think, you know, that's an overwhelming statement you just made.
What you just said. I tend to make that's the early bird talking.
But it's
true. Me.
It's the truth.
Yeah.
And that, for many people right there, that's just too much. That's just too much.
So they'd rather look at it through rose-colored glasses or ignore it or accept it as we're able to live with it.
Or deal with something that they feel that is more doable, more reachable. See, I think these things have to be broken down into bite-sized pieces, mm-hmm. right? Mm-hmm. The whole conversation about solve the homeless problem, that's not what we're trying to do. We're trying to bite this problem piece by piece.
You don't want me to get into doc, because I think you're actually right. We're trying to figure out just how much pain we can continue to live with. Just how much more numb we can be to our brothers and sisters, not how to make us a really safe place and wholesome place to live, not how to make us a place where there's equitable distribution of wealth and accountability for who participates, not a place where living and saving, we're trying, not a place where the homeless is actually have a real legitimate chance to transition because of programs like yours. In this town, we'd rather look at it in a way and say, you know what, we can survive with that. Line one, Miss Eloise.
Good morning. Good morning, Thomas.
Good morning,
Doctor.
God bless you.
Good morning.
You have hit the nail on the head with this homeless situation. You know, we have people that have love in our heart, used to have love in our heart for each other, in sympathy for each other. But all of that is gone now because everybody that's at the top is so money hungry, and people can't even have a property. The thing is, they're going around and they got 20, 30 property, and the poor people up under the bridge can't get a proper place to be. Because these people are not thinking about another human being life, how they live in their life. Nobody want to be up under the bridge. Some people say, oh, they want that. No, you don't. No, they don't. You don't want that, but that's where you want to put them, because you want riches. But how much riches do you need to be in this world? Mm-hmm. How much riches do you need? You know, I'm hearing you, and I know I got to get off, because I've been told I got to get off. But anyway, keep coming.
Thank you.
Keep preaching to the people. Let them know that ain't all everybody going to be against them. And there's enough houses to serve everybody.
Thank you.
They wouldn't have to be up under the bridge, Thomas. And that's the God love truth.
Thank you, Ms. Eloise. God bless you.
10, 20 houses. Who paying the tax on these houses?
Thank you so much. We appreciate you. God bless you. Ms. Eloise, is it just a different time we're in? We see an investment in million-dollar condominiums and high-rise apartments, and we don't even have enough people to fill them right now. We see investors and banks giving loans to people to do these expensive places, and we don't even have a population to fill them right now.
Yeah. You know what I don't like to do? I don't like, here's another word, superlatives, because what they do is they assume that there's nobody out there.
Right.
And that right there puts a damper on things. Yeah. I submit to you that there are a lot of people trying to address this issue, mm-hmm. but we need more people who have funds and money to help address this
issue. Dr. Rochelle had done them. You kept it real today. And this issue about homelessness, to me, the way you set it up and these social ills and these critical issues that don't seem to go away, you brought me back to a comment that I've made, especially when I talk to groups or I lecture on a lot of these issues, is that, you have a million-dollar problem. Mm-hmm. In an area that needs critical need and critical funding, mm-hmm. and we give somebody a $100,000 grant to go fix it. Mm-hmm. Now you're $1,100,000 mm-hmm. in the hole, and you have not resourced them to the level that they can make a dent or move in the right direction with that social ill.
Absolutely.
You just helped me figure it out.
Okay.
Dr. Rochelle had done them. That's what she does. You promise to come back?
I promise.
I believe you. When we come back, man, we're going to talk to Mr. Danny Bakewell Jr., one of the co-owners of Bakewell Media and WBOK, of the effort to reorganize and reboot WBOK. We'll be back after the break.